Blue Wire.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter, New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always by my co-host, Nick Filato. And it's been a busy week for the Big Blue Banter podcast. We want to kind of recap some of the work we've done, some of the work we will continue to do, and some of what's ahead before we break down what's going to happen tonight. For those of you who missed it last week, I would shout out two specific podcasts that are 100% worth your time, and all of our podcasts we hope are worth your time, but two that I really want to shout out is our interview with Eric Crocker, former NFL defensive back, broke down the wide receiver class, the cornerback class, Darnay Holmes, but more importantly, I think the two biggest takeaways there were, one, what you should be looking for when you're scouting the wide receiver position, and something that is often missed in his mind by big draft media when it comes to scouting the wide receiver position, and how that's kind of led him to not only thinking there is a false narrative when it comes to a player like Devontae Smith, for example, who is his wide receiver one in this class, and that false narrative is that you got to be big to beat press coverage. In his mind, it's actually the opposite, and he gets more into that, but also a wide receiver who is not being talked up about much. Even me and Nick didn't do a profile on him, and I've recently been watching a lot of him because I want to see, you know, what I missed or, you know, what didn't stand out. And it's a player who he believes could be a top 10, top 15 talent if he was on a different college team and in a different college system. And that's Diami Brown, the wide receiver from UNC. So if you want to find out more about them, listen to that. And then check out our podcast with Elliot Christ of FTN. I mean, I think that was a lot of fun. I got a lot of positive feedback from people, friends and family, of course, who, what are they going to tell me, right? They're going to tell me only good things, I'm sure. But they did really like that one. And that one apparently was what they think like our podcast should evolve a bit more into. So if you enjoyed that, hearing a podcast from Elliot, which was on draft bets, prop bets, the Giants market at pick 11, what the odds are saying, things of that nature, how to be a better sports gambler, let us know in the feedback and we can do more of that stuff in the future. But on tonight's show, we are going to do a full 32-pick first-round mock draft. We are acting as the GM of that team. We are going to pick these players based on what we think will happen, not based on what we would do. So please keep that in mind. This is what we think will happen, not what we would do if we were the GM. And before any of that, there's still some promotion I gotta do, baby, because we just put up a YouTube page. Everyone on here who has shouted out me or Nick privately or otherwise and told us we need to get a YouTube page going. Well, now we did. And our first two videos, they were similar to our podcast, but our third video, thanks to Mr. Nick Filato over here, was a All-22 film breakdown of Northwestern offensive tackle prospect Rashawn Slater. This was incredible work. It's a preview of what you're going to get during the regular season for the All-22 Giants film breakdowns. It's a preview of what you're going to get after the draft when we know who the Giants actually took. Please, please, if you said you wanted this type of content, please do us a favor. Head over to YouTube. I know my old plea used to be go on iTunes, leave a 5-star review and a rating, and we'll answer your questions. My new plea is, please, don't worry about iTunes. I'm going to let you guys off and have a break on iTunes. Please head over to the Big Blue Banter YouTube page. Hit subscribe. Hit like on a few videos. Give him a shot. Watch Nick's film review of Rashawn Slater. But please, more so than anything else, subscribe to that channel. Watch those videos. Help us grow that thing because it's really in its baby stages. Like, this reminds me of maybe the first month or two of Big Blue Banter back in the day when I first started this with Turchin. So help us grow that. Help us get that going. The rest of the promotion I'll save for the end of the show, but before we get into the mock draft, Nick, I am going to start us off on a little bit of a different note. And this is a long-winded intro, so I'm happy to finally be wrapping this up in a second. Nick Filato never watched Game of Thrones in his entire life. Through all of the hype, he managed to not only not watch it, but avoid all spoilers. So I am not making a wild guess here and assuming that most of you, or at least a good portion of you who are listening to the show, were big-time Game of Thrones fans because it swept the nation. But Nick found a way to not watch and avoid all spoilers. And now, tonight, he let me know that he just watched, unspoiled, no idea it was coming, The Red Wedding. So by the way, I apologize to any of you who haven't seen the show. Yikes, I may have just dropped the spoiler. But to be honest with you, at this point, I'm not a big fan of, like, I think spoilers have shelf life. So I think if it's been this long since a show's been said, I just am not big on, like, Sopranos. People, oh, you can't say, you can talk about the Sopranos now. It's not a spoiler anymore. And I feel like Thrones is in there. But Nick, How are you doing tonight? And let us know how you felt after watching that absolute massacre.
Honestly, just because I'm in the same spot as a lot of people, there could be people listening to this that have watched the episode. I'm not going to say anything about episode other than, wow. That's all I'm going to say. People who have seen it will know exactly what I'm referencing to. I'm absolutely mind blown.
I respect that. To not, because yeah. I do know you. You hate spoilers, and I get it. I'm with you. It's better to not have, it's the better the surprise, the better it is. But let me ask you a non-spoiler-free question then about Thrones and your review. Experience so far through episode 9 of season 3. So what is that? That's about 35-40% of the series. Give me your power rankings of your three favorite characters and your three most hated. I'm not gonna make you do five. Give me top three, bottom three.
I don't really have a bottom three. Okay. I guess like you would just say Tywin maybe.
Ooh.
But his like he's the actor is so good. Yeah. My top three. You know, I like Jon Snow. Arya's cool. I like the Hound.
Okay. Ooh, Hound in a top three. I like
he's,
that
he's
call.
Up there. I don't really have a top three. I'm being put on the spot at the moment. I like Jaime. I think he's cool. And then Dany.
Daenerys. Hell yeah. Daenerys Targaryen. Yeah.
And, who's the Jorah?
Oh, Jorah.
Big,
nice.
Big Jorah fan. I think he has one of the coolest voices in the realm.
He does have a pretty cool voice in the realm. And I remember when Thrones was at its height, people were doing impressions, and the Jorah impression that this guy did was spot on. He's got a great cadence and a great voice. But yeah, Nick is diving into the world of Game of Thrones, which I find so fun because, man, I love that show for a while. I was deep into it. I was reading the backstories, the histories of the realm. I personally hated the ending, which we can get to another time later once Nick actually goes through it. But in general, what a show. All right, let's get to this mock draft tonight because we felt like it's time to do our one-round mock draft. We've done our full seven-round Giants mock draft. And one more time for the fans in the back, if you want to watch or find out who we mocked to the Giants in our full seven-round Giants-only mock draft, you got to head to the YouTube page. Head to YouTube.com, type in Big Blue Banter. You'll see our logo. Hit subscribe. Hit the video that says 7-round Giants only mock draft, and you'll find out all our picks for the Giants. Tonight, we're going to make one pick for the Giants and 31 picks for other teams. And we're going to start at number one overall with Nick Filato on the clock. He is now the Jaguars general manager. It's not you, Nick, just to keep in mind. You are acting as the brain trust right now, which is, Urban Meyer and Trent Baalke, the old 49ers GM. So that's put yourself in the mind of them, and who are you taking at number one overall?
I mean, this is definitely not one to overthink. It's Trevor Lawrence, quarterback out of Clemson. He's been the golden child coming out of college football since his true freshman year at Clemson. So you just don't even overthink it. And I know the last couple of weeks we've been hearing, oh, is Zach Wilson really? No, it's all just bullshit. It's going to be Trevor Lawrence.
Lock it in. That's what I think you're spot on. I think that's what they'll do. And at number two, I'm not going to waste any time either. The Jets won't trade the pick I have. The Jets sitting there. And I think Joe Douglas will go with Zach Wilson. That's the player he wants there. So now you're back on the board here at number three overall. Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, San Francisco 49ers. You traded up for this pick, Nick. Where do you think they're going to go after all the talk that we've heard on this pick?
So they traded up, and you keep hearing Mac Jones from all these people who are plugged in. As much as I love Justin Fields and some of these other quarterbacks, I think it's going to be Mac Jones, man. I do. I don't think Kyle Shanahan gives a crap what draft Twitter feels, and it seems like if this is the guy that he has circled and he traded up for him, I'm not going to sit there and question one of the smartest offensive minds in football. So, you know, hopefully it works out for him, to be honest, someone who could stay within structure, and I think that's what they value, somebody who, you know, is not going to have the ability to extend plays like a Justin Fields. He's not as dynamic as someone like Trey Lance, who I'm not ruling out, to be honest, because this whole Mac Jones thing could just be bullcrap. But right now I'm going to go with Mac Jones because I honestly looked at Trey Lance when this trade was made. I thought it was going to be for him because I felt like he played in that, you know, pro style system. You know, he made the calls at the line of scrimmage. He made his own protections, did all those things. Everybody talks about North Dakota State's offense a lot because it gives the quarterback a lot of responsibility. He was 19. He's only played in, I think he's played in the same amount of games or started the same amount of games as Mac Jones. No one really talks about that because he only played against Central Arkansas in 2020 because he's an FCS school. But the fact that they have that system where it's run heavy and it's first read's not there, get the football out of your hands, check it down to the fullback in the flat. They really love implementing the fullback similar to what San Francisco does with Kyle Juszczyk, and just the upside of Trey Lance is awesome. Yeah. But you know what? I think I'm going to go kind of boring here and go with Mac Jones. There's just a lot of hype there, and I'm not an insider, so I'm not 100% sure what they're going to do. Wouldn't be shocked if it's Trey, though.
Yeah, I mean, those odds now on Mac Jones have dropped to minus 180. He is now evolving into a not heavy favorite, but a pretty solid favorite to be this number three overall pick. I think ultimately what happened is they made the trade up to three thinking we're going to take Mac Jones. Then they did their due diligence and they said, we'll look at all of these players and we'll take a look and reconsider maybe going with another quarterback. But ultimately, I think you're right, Nick. I think they're going to settle on Mac Jones. So now with the fourth pick overall, and I think in our mock right here, we're going to do no trades. Is that right? I think it's just the safer way to do this thing. So in our mock here at the fourth overall pick, there's been a lot of speculation. The Falcons will go with Kyle Pitts, the tight end out of Florida. That speculation is driven by new head coach Arthur Smith, who has in the past run a lot of 12 personnel with two tight ends, but also in the past has done so with unheralded players at the tight end position that he's made into producers. So I'm not going with that route. I'm going with the route of the Falcons are a defense that's multiple years away from competing. The Falcons, even though they did rework that Matt Ryan deal, and even though they did recently, just a couple years ago or last year, I think, re-sign Julio Jones. With all that said, I'm going with the belief here that they are a franchise wise enough to understand they might not be in a position like this anytime soon to draft a potential future franchise quarterback with a top five pick. And for that matter, I'm going to go here with Trey Lance, the quarterback who makes a lot more sense even for the Falcons because they do have Matt Ryan. And he can sit and learn behind Ryan, and they have been building up their offensive line in previous years, as recently as taking two first-round offensive linemen in two drafts ago. So I like Atlanta there for Trey Lance. You're on the clock now. You're Duke Tobin, the Cincinnati Bengals decision-maker. Who are you taking at five overall?
Duke Tobin, that's a unique name right there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And who they went with Caleb McGarry, I remember, because...
McGarry and Lindstrom were their
first the kid from Boston College.
Yep.
Honestly, I liked Lindstrom in that draft, but I thought both those guys were pretty massive reaches.
Me too.
Caleb McGarry especially. And I got to meet him at the Senior Bowl, and he was like a really cool guy, really personable and everything like that. But I thought he was like a fourth-round guy, and when I heard he got drafted in the first round, I was like, eef.
Yeah, neither have played that well either.
Yeah, no, not great. So this is where it gets interesting with the Cincinnati Bengals, too.
Yes.
A lot of people think, I guess, the draft somewhat starts at the fourth pick with the Falcons, you know? But, I mean, I don't think the third pick's certain yet. But then you got the Bengals, because I think they can go one of two directions. You either go Penei Sewell. Rashawn Slater, you can throw him in there. Offensive tackle to help Joe Burrow, because you can't have Bobby Hart as your starting offensive tackle. It's not something that's going to happen. I don't even believe he's there anymore. That offensive line needs massive rehaul there. They had the kid that they drafted out of Alabama, I believe, a few years ago, who is a solid player. I want to say he basically had a redshirt year when they first took him. That's Jonah Williams. And other than that, they bring in Riley Reiff. He's been hit or miss. You have guys like Trey Hopkins, Michael Jordan, and Quentin Spain on your offensive line. Then you have the Ja'Marr Chase factor, man. And you know Joe Burrow is probably pounding the table to be reunited with his former college teammate where they dominated college football. So I think it could be really, really fascinating. And I'm usually offensive line over receiver. But for this, I'm going to go a little bit chaotic. I'm going to have the Joe Burrow factor really lend himself towards going after his receiver that he knows so well and has such a good rapport with. And then they'll worry about the tackle position later. So I'm going to go with Ja'Marr Chase.
Okay.
Wide receiver, LSU.
So just to recap so far, we've got Trevor Lawrence, number one overall to the Jaguars. Zach Wilson, number two overall to the Jets. Mac Jones, number three overall to the 49ers. Trey Lance, number four overall, the quarterback out of NDSU, to the Falcons. And then Ja'Marr Chase, the wide receiver from LSU, to the Bengals. And I'm on the clock here at number six overall with Miami Dolphins. I think ultimately... It's pretty well known at this point that the Dolphins made the decision to trade down from their original pick at three and then all the way back up within a matter of minutes, it seemed like, to six because they want to get one of these top playmakers in this draft. Having said that, their offensive line currently looks like this. Austin Jackson at left tackle, who they took last year in the first round, was better than expected, I think. Well, at least for those of us like me and you who saw bad tape and weren't big fans. Ereck Flowers at left guard, who they paid a lot of money to play left guard. He's been okay there, I guess.
Yeah, okay is a stretch in my opinion. I remember everyone told me, like, yeah, you know, he's like a pretty good tackle with Washington. And then I went and guard. And then I went and I watched his film. I was like, no, he's not. He's just a big guy. Like,
yeah, it can
just
work.
Not as exposed.
Right, not as exposed to that when he's not on an island. Then Matt Skira at center, who's an okay player. Solomon Kinley, that seems like a hole to me at right guard. And then Robert Hunt, who was their second-round pick last year, who they like, at right tackle. So I don't think it's out of the realm for them to just sit here and take Sewell and just be like, we'll take Penny Sewell, we'll take Rashawn Slater here. But I think ultimately it just seems so much more likely they did this move to get a top playmaker. And so in this spot, with Mike Gesicki already on the roster, I think they're actually going to pair up one of these two Alabama receivers, now that Ja'Marr Chase is off the board, with Tua Tagovailoa. Now, who will that be is the question mark here. And I think, ultimately, I'm going to go with Jaylen Waddle as the pick. I think that, just based on the regime that is over there in Miami, I think they're going to value his speed, what that can mean for their offensive system, what that can mean for who's calling, you know, what that can mean for Tua, what can mean for who's calling the plays. Although Tua obviously had, you know, good work with Devontae Smith as well, I just think ultimately Jaylen Waddle's calling card is a little bit more coveted by NFL teams. So that's my pick at 6. You're back on the clock with the Lions at 7.
Yeah, so we got the Detroit Lions here. Defense was a mess last year, but there's so many offensive players that are still on the board. I mean, we have a Kyle Pitts falling right here, which is kind of ridiculous. We still have Penei Sewell. You still have Rashawn Slater. You look at the Lions depth chart. You have Taylor Decker, the kid they drafted in the first round, 2016, out of Ohio State. Very solid left tackle. And then on the right side, you have Terrell Crosby, the kid out of Oregon they got in like the fifth round, who fell in that draft, who's respectable. They brought in Halepuli Vaitai from the Philadelphia Eagles last offseason for way too much money, which I never really understood. But now this is a new regime, and I think they're going to want to protect Jared Goff, because that's what you have to do if you're going to maximize Jared Goff. I think they can easily go quarterback here, but with the slide of one of these offensive linemen, I'm actually probably going to go with Penei Sewell here.
Okay. I think I like that call a lot right there with the Lions, and I think that a lot of people have made the mistake of saying the Lions will go with one of the receivers here. I don't think that's going to happen. If you read the transcript from the Lions GM when he took the job coming over from Los Angeles, one thing he specifically pointed out, and they don't give away much in these opening GM press conferences, but sometimes they drop important lines. Gettleman dropped them when he talked about importance of him of stopping the run and running the football, and then he went on to make decisions based on that. This GM said, we did something very unique in Los Angeles with the Rams and how we crafted a wide receiver core. It was unique in what we looked for, he said, in the draft, and it was unique in when we took them. And if you look at that, they did not draft any first-round receivers there. They took a lot of mid, second, third, fourth-round receivers there in Los Angeles. I think that's going to be his same strategy in Detroit, especially after letting Kenny Golladay go. I think this is spot on by you. They are not going to. A lot of people talk this up as a potential team to steal one of the potential Bama weapons from the Giants. I do not see that at all. So I think this is the right pick here. And now I'm on the clock here with Carolina, which to me is one of the most interesting teams in the entire top 10. I'm very happy I was lucky enough to draw them in this mock draft, because I think this is an interesting spot for a lot of reasons. In my opinion, this would come down to two players here for them. They're either going to make the pick that ultimately I'm going to go with, so I don't want to tease it. Let me first start by backing it up a little and walking this back. I think they're in play for a quarterback, Justin Fields, here. Because everything, one way you can look at it is, no way they're not going to take a quarterback. They just traded for Sam Darnold. They'll pick up his option. They already are paying Teddy. Or you could look at it like, they've been insanely aggressive since Tepper took over as owner in trying to find quarterbacks. And they have a more analytics-based approach, which would suggest to me they understand the importance of, you got to have a quarterback or none of this matters. And so they took a swing on Teddy. It didn't work out how maybe they planned. They immediately took a swing on Sam. It's not like they took off a season for quarterback and they took off an offseason. I think this is a franchise that at all times is going to be looking at a potential future quarterback. Ultimately, I'm not going to have them take Fields here, because I don't think they're going to view Fields specifically as that quarterback. I think I'm going to go here with Rashawn Slater, the offensive tackle, out of Northwestern. I think it makes too much sense for them if they're going to try to build around Sam Darnold and give him a shot. Then you're going to have Little. You're going to have Taylor Moten. Little can kind of be that new swing tackle, maybe kick inside a guard like some suggested he would have to. You put Slater right in there at left tackle. He fits in really nicely, in my opinion. You still have Matt Paradise there. You still have Dennis Daly on the inside. Pat Eifert. These are decent players. They still need to improve their interior, in my mind. But they also need to improve that second tackle position. And there's still enough on that offensive line that needs to be improved, where I don't think they can pass up a player like Slater here. So that's my pick there at 8.
Nice. And I look at this now, we got the Denver Broncos sitting here at 9.
Yes.
And I think they're happy because Justin Fields falls to this pick. I'm not 100% sure if John Elway's going to look at Justin Fields and be like, hey, that's the quarterback I want. But I am 100% sure that they look at Drew Lock and say, we need to upgrade from this position. There's a ton of value on the boards right now, though.
Right.
You have Kyle Pitts, but they drafted Albert O last year in the fourth round, and they drafted Noah Fant a couple years ago in the first round. So you have the tight end position secure. You look at these wide receivers. You drafted Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler last year. You're probably not going to invest in the wide receiver position. You brought in Kyle Fuller, I believe it was, from the Chicago Bears after they released him. So the cornerback room after they released AJ Bouye kind of leads you to be like, yeah, maybe they'll go with someone like a Patrick Surtain. But you have Kyle Fuller there. And then you bring in Ronald Darby to play your nickelback. You also have guys like Bryce Callahan, who was injured last year but was a solid player. So the cornerback position, I think they could upgrade, but I'm not going to go with Surtain. I'm going to go with Justin Fields, quarterback, and call it quits there. Just all five quarterbacks are now off the board before the Giants selection.
Wow. This would be a pretty good start for the Giants, I think, as we move forward to the 10th pick and the last and final pick before the Giants, which is the Dallas Cowboys. And here in this spot, I think in a lot of scenarios here, the Dallas Cowboys would go with Patrick Surtain. Or J.C. Horn. I'm not quite sure who in their scout room they view as the cornerback one. I think that's a question that every team will have a different answer on when it comes to Horn versus Surtain. And honestly, I think some people might even have Newsom up there with them or number one with them. I know we had Eric Crocker on, and when he broke down this class, he had Surtain third of those three. In his mind, from the film he's seen, Surtain is his third corner. So I don't think it's going to be a certain lock here that if they went cornerback, they would go with Surtain. But the Cowboys are also a team that proved last year that they are not going to pass up on value. If they think they're getting, let's say, the second or third best player in this draft class at 10 overall, they're going to take that play, especially if they think that the two teams after them who are in the division could potentially take that player based on their team needs, and then they'd have to match up against that second or third best player, and all they had to do to avoid that was take that best player in that second. They're going to do it. So I'm going to go with Kyle Pitts here, the tight end. I know it seems crazy given how bad their defense was, and given the weapons they have, but ultimately it will allow them a scenario where they can get out of the Cooper contract, they can get out of the Zeke contract and get the cap hits back there. They can consider either offering Michael Gallup a team-friendly deal, or even letting him walk and just having CeeDee Lamb and Kyle Pitts as your main two offensive weapons under contract for the next 4 years, including this one. 4 years when you consider the team control for CeeDee Lamb, and then a fifth year for Kyle Pitts. So it gives them a really good spot for their future, I think, at the skill position. They can kind of punt it and start to address that defense next offseason. It will put them in a weird spot this year because I know they're expecting to compete for a Super Bowl after re-signing Dak. And like, if you draft Kyle Pitts and you don't add a defensive player until you pick again at 41 overall, whenever they pick, it's a tough spot. Your defense may not see many major improvement at all. I mean, all they did really was sign Keanu Neal this offseason. They lost corners. They lost depth on the defensive line. Alvin Smith is gone, who actually was one of their biggest contributors somehow last year. And they still have that injury-prone linebacker. Like, it's a risky pick, but I just think the value's there, and they're going to take Pitts.
It's going to be Big 12 football for them. Literally, it's going to be, we're going to score 45 points. You guys need to score 46 to beat us because their defense would be horrendous. I think Dan Quinn is going to help right the ship there because Mike Nolan was just in way over his head. Yes. Like they didn't even know how to execute a run fit. It was insane. And then by week three, the locker room was like falling apart. It's like, that's a freaking mess over there. Yeah. Like, that's horrendous.
It's ugly.
But having Kyle Pitts fall all the way there, that's I don't see a path to where Jerry Jones is going to allow Kyle Pitts to go to the Giants, whereas if he's available there for the Dallas Cowboys, I just don't see him doing that. Now we're at the Giants, man. And recap, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Jamar Chase, Jalen Waddle, Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater, Justin Fields, Kyle Pitts off the board. So now we have, that's the 11th pick. There's Devonta Smith, Elijah Vera Tucker, any of the edges. They're all still around. Both the top tackles are off the board. The star tight ends off the board, five quarterbacks, and then Jamar Chase and Jalen Waddle. So what are you thinking, man? Because this is we're gonna make a group selection for the Giants.
Yes. And again, remember, this is not what I'm thinking or what Nick is thinking. None of these picks have been. This is what we would do, what we're thinking would happen from that GM's perspective. So this is us thinking in Dave Gettleman mind. So if we were Dave Gettleman right now and the board fell like this, I'm gonna stick with the prediction I made, Nick, early January. I just think it's gonna come true. I think they're gonna take Devonta Smith here at 11 overall. He checks so many Gettleman boxes. It will be tempting for them, I think, to take Patrick Surtain, who I know they love based on the system that they play and how just a cookie cutter fit there. But they did sign Adoree Jackson. It's going to be tempting for them to take, honestly, from what I've been reading, they like Kwity Paye a lot. They like, you know, potentially Azeez Ojulari, but more so I've been reading about Paye. I think they'll probably be tempted to do that as well, because again, like you said, I mean, this would be the first defensive player off the board in our mock so far. There's zero defensive players taken in the top 10 picks.
And honestly, like, I don't think that's ridiculous.
No. Like, I think it's more ridiculous to think a defensive player will go. And I mean, except for the corners. I don't think any defensive player really is going to go.
It's the corners. Because the Micah Parsons, he's kind of an enigma. We're not really 100% sure. It seems like, you know, just from what we hear from people who have more connections than we do, that people are concerned about him, and he may be in for a slide. But...
And he's an off-ball linebacker. So you would need none of that to be considered in the top 10 for the position he plays. Mm-hmm.
So, like, for me, it's Patrick Surtain or J.C. Horn with Caleb Farley's back injuries that everyone seems to be really concerned about as well.
And Newsom has the injuries as well.
Yes. Yeah, so, and it's really interesting, but for me, I'm going to go with Devonta Smith as well, so I think we're in lockstep here.
Yeah, that's how they
and
would
honestly,
do it.
Like what would you do in this situation? We could play that game as well.
We could play that game as well.
No trading back. I would be fine with Devonta Smith here.
It would be my pick here.
Yeah, honestly.
That would be my pick. I'd take him over Vera Tucker. I'd take him over any of those edges for
Vera Tucker's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Because no one's really linked him to the Giants as much. And you hear a little bit more about it now, but he's a very talented player with that positional versatility who has good tape at guard and tackle. And I'm not really 100% sure why we don't talk about him a little bit more, like in a linkage to the Giants. Maybe it's just because his upside's not as high as the other two. That's probably why, but technically he's a good player. And I haven't watched his tape in a while, but from what I remember, I came away pleased with his evaluation.
At least from my evaluation of him, and from where I see it projection wise I see less of a ceiling for him at offensive tackle. Projection wise I see a big ceiling at offensive tackle for Slater and for Sewell. And I know everybody's like, oh, but you're gonna put him at guard. I'm not necessarily putting these guys at guard. I'm not the biggest believer that Matt Pert's gonna be some all pro guard for the Giants. I'm sorry, all pro tackle. And if I can get myself an all pro tackle, like I think Rashawn Slater will be, like I think Penny Sewell will be, I don't feel that Vera Tucker will definitely be an all-pro tackle.
Yeah.
I think he probably has some upside to be all-pro or around that at guard. But I'm not. If I'm swinging at 11 at an offensive lineman, I actually want that tackle. Like, everybody looks at this Slater pick differently than I do, I think.
Yeah, it's also the standpoint. It's also the depth of the interior offensive line class. There's more interior offensive linemen that can be had on day two and even into day three. Whereas Devonta Smith is kind of this is a good wide receiver class. Don't get me wrong, but it's kind of like that top tier. You have Ja'Marr Chase, you have Jalen Waddle, you have Devonta Smith. Then there's a little bit of drop off to the Rashad Batemans of the world, and then you get into like the little more gadget type players like Kadarius Toney and Rondell Moore. So, but for the Giants, Devonta Smith here checks all the boxes of what the Giants are going to like, and I just think he can. Him and Kenny Golladay would be a really dynamic 1-2 combo for whoever's being the quarterback for the Giants. Hopefully it's Daniel Jones, but we'll see what happens in the future. So we're going to lock in Devonta Smith here at 11.
Yeah, and just to double back on the Slater thing, I'm really, really high on Rashawn Slater. And I think when you look at like Slater versus Vera Tucker, right, because we're all locking in Sewell as like the number one, let's say, in this, because obviously he has so much upside.
It's ridiculous, yeah.
But I think Slater has... The footwork that Slater has and how quick he is and light and nimble he is on his feet and how well he moves, that I don't see from as many of these prods. I don't really see that from anyone but him and Sewell. So it's like, that's really what it is for me. It's that footwork.
So fast,
it's that elite trait. I think the Vera Tucker is a good player, but if I'm not getting that elite trait, an elite trait that I think can translate not only to guard but tackle, I'm just not as enthused at 11, especially when I could be taking who I think is a blue chip prospect in Devonta Smith.
No, and I think that's completely fair of you to say. And here we are, going at 12, still no defensive players taken.
Am I on the clock or you're on the clock?
You're on the
clock. I'm on the clock, and so with this pick, ultimately I don't get to see out what I predicted earlier than I even predicted the Devonta Smith thing. When I predicted this, I think the day the Eagles punted, I predicted they will not draft one of these top receivers. And now we're not going to get to see it because they're all off the board, including Pitts. But I knew for a fact they weren't going receiver back-to-back first rounds, especially after using a second round. That's not how Howie Roseman builds. But how he will build here is defensively. And I think he's going to go with J.C. Horn as the first corner off the board. You can still get J.C. Horn, I think, plus 450 now to be the first defensive player drafted. Those odds are less for the first corner drafted if you want to make a bet on this and believe in that I might be right in this mock draft, that me and Nick might be right. But who knows, because mocks are impossible to do, but we're trying our best here. But ultimately, I think there's still value there. I think J.C. Horn is going to be a player that NFL teams like a lot more than the original NFL media like, because he can be that lockdown man coverage corner. And like Eric Crocker said on our podcast. I mean, he sold me when he said it, Nick, when he told us. He's like, he's a dog. You look at him out there, and every single game, he wants to play, go up against in one-on-one coverage against the best receiver. He said, even when that meant going into the slot, something he wasn't comfortable with doing, something his body type doesn't suggest he should be doing, against Elijah Moore and Ole Miss, he did that. And Moore had to fight for, scrap for every yard. He had like 6-7 catches with no yards, so, you know, with minimal yards. So that's my pick there, Horn. And now you're back on the clock here, Nick, and you will be drafting for the Los Angeles Chargers at number 13 overall.
Yeah, so the Chargers, I find them to be interesting as well, yeah, because I think there's a lot of different directions they can go in. They could go with an edge, even though they got Joey Bosa, but they lost Melvin Ingram. They could go with a cornerback. I think retaining Michael Davis was actually a huge move by them. He was a low-key free agent that I wanted the Giants to target, and he's actually a really solid player for them that I believe they got as like a undrafted guy or a late pick in like 2017, and he kind of blossomed into a nice role in 2020.
Interesting.
They get Chris Harris as well. He's their nickelback. He was injured a lot last year, but he's getting a little bit long in the tooth. So I think Patrick Surtain is a guy to definitely consider here, but I'm going to go with an offensive lineman here because I think you have to be able to protect Justin Herbert. Their offensive line, Brian Bulaga, was hurt a lot last year. They bring in Corey Linsley from Green Bay to play center. I think that was a huge move by them, but I still think they should invest in the offensive line because Ode Abushi at left guard, that's not something that's going to inspire any hope whatsoever. Right. So for me, I'm going with Elijah Vera Tucker here.
Okay.
And I kind of think like this could be a realistic landing spot for a player like Elijah Vera Tucker, and he could slide right into that left guard position. And if Trey Pipkins did end up struggling, which I'm not 100% sure on how good he's been since he's come into the league in 2019. I'm pretty sure he's actually exceeded some people's expectations, but you still have that ability to possibly move Vera Tucker to a tackle spot if there is some struggles there because he has that within his repertoire as well. So I'm going to go with Elijah.
I like that call a lot, and I think that could very likely be the case. And now with the Vikings on the board at number 14 overall, I think they can go in a number of directions too. I think they'll certainly be eyeing offensive line because right now their tackle situation outside of Brian O'Neill is not pretty at all. And they need to figure out something there because it looks like they're moving their second round pick, Ezra Cleveland. They're going to keep him on the inside. You got Garrett Bradbury, who they took in 2019 in the first round. I guess they're going to keep him on the inside, I would think. So it's an ugly situation on the offensive line. So I think they'll be eyeing Christian Darrisaw. I think they'll be eyeing Tevin Jenkins here. But I don't think they're going to be able to pass up on replenishing what's so important to Mike Zimmer's system, and that's the defensive line position. And they already signed Dalvin Tomlinson, but outside of Tomlinson, with what's happened there, I mean, they took a swing on Yannick Ngakoue. They wanted him to be there. That shows how much they wanted to improve edge. It didn't work out. He wasn't the only guy they let go. Everson Griffin used to be one of their best pass rushers. He's gone. So now really all that's left is Danielle Hunter there. And then they have a bunch of other guys, Stephen Weatherly, Jalen Holmes, guys who haven't made much of an impact. So I think here they get their chance to get the edge they want. And I think for this 4-3 system, actually, I'm actually going to give them Kwity Paye here. I think Kwity Paye, to me, makes the most sense here as their defensive end pick, as their edge pick. And I think he will ultimately be the first edge off the board if it falls like this.
That would be really interesting, too. Kwity Paye going to... I honestly, I look at like Gregory Rousseau would fit there. I think Jalen... Like, I honestly think whoever Mike Zimmer wants, he can find a way to make him fit. But yes, Kwity Paye would definitely be a wise investment there. Like I say about Kwity Paye, I'm not low. I don't not like the player. I just believe there's going to be better players available at 11 for the Giants. Like, I think he's going to be a good player, high floor, but I don't know how high that ceiling is. Whereas there's other players that I feel like have higher ceilings who can help the Giants in a more impactful way, especially early on. That's my whole thing with Kwity Paye.
But I like that.
We're on to the New England Patriots, and this is interesting because obviously they had their down year last year. Bill Belichick just watched Tom Brady hoist the Lombardi Trophy without him. So he's getting all of these COVID opt-outs back. So you're getting a lot of guys returning to your defense. You bring back Kyle Van Noy. You add Matt Judon in free agency, which was a huge addition for them. Because I was thinking about going possibly edge here. I was actually thinking about Kwity Paye, to be honest, because he fits a lot of the character type of things that the New England Patriots look for as well. But I'm not going to go in that direction, obviously. You look at their secondary, getting a little bit old. Nick Saban. Patrick Surtain. That's all I got to say right there.
I think if Surtain falls here to 15,
It's an easy lock it in Patrick Surtain for me. I don't really think it's too much of a discussion because I feel like from a mental standpoint, a guy who started as a true freshman for Nick Saban is going to be able to step into this defense and really not miss a beat from a processing standpoint because there's a lot of diverse coverages that Bill Belichick runs, and he would be the number two next to Stephon Gilmore, and he's kind of be ingratiated into the NFL and then eventually kind of assume that number one role
once Gilmore gets a little bit too old. Hopefully Gilmore has a bounce back year, because he was an absolute stud in 2019. Last year was a little bit of a step down. So, and honestly, man, you look at that secondary, you have Stephon Gilmore, JC Jackson, who is a stud. You still have Devin McCourty, but he's getting a little bit older. You drafted Kyle Duggar in the second round last year, and you have Jonathan Jones as your nickel. That's a really, really deep secondary right there.
It is a deep secondary, and I think that they're always going to be looking to add secondary players, given that they have a similar system to what we have with the Giants with Patrick Graham. They believe that pass cover play, individuals who can cover the passer are more important than individuals who can rush the passer. You saw that a couple years ago when Trey Flowers had the breakout season for them. They let him walk in free agency for a massive deal with the Lions. They did not let Stephon Gilmore walk. They instead actually made him a huge free agent offering, which was at the time against anything they've done. They've made sure Devin McCourty was with them and stayed with them. Constant contract after contract. So they, I agree, will continue to invest here in the secondary. And I like that pick a lot for them. But now I'm on the clock at number 16 overall with the Arizona Cardinals, who I think are in a really interesting position at 16. I think that ultimately, if you look at their 2020 season, my first gripe would be with the coach. I think Cliff Kingsbury sucks. In general, I think he's just going to say it out loud. I think he's lucky to have Kyler Murray, and his in-game coaching was pathetic, but I also don't even think the system looks that good that he's brought to them. But I do think that one of the key problems outside of the coaching was the offensive line. When you watch that team, it just wasn't there. Justin Pugh, when he's healthy, is okay for them at guard, but he's not healthy a lot. DJ Humphries, they re-signed, he's okay. Calvin Beecham is okay at tackle. I think here they do what I thought they would do last year at number 8 overall. I thought they would take one of the big four tackles for Murray. They didn't. They went for Simmons and ultimately got a tackle later in the draft, somebody who I liked, Josh Jones, but he ultimately didn't have a huge first season. But I think here they take Christian Darrisaw, the offensive tackle, out of Virginia.
The Raiders are pissed right now.
Yeah, oh yeah. And they take the offensive tackle out of Tech, a player who I think can ultimately immediately slide in for them and start week one. I do believe he's kind of the cutoff there. I think Jenkins might be able to do it as well. I'm a little less high on Jenkins than others, but I'll throw him in there as far as tackles go. I think here they take one of the last tackles on the board and give Murray that protection he needs.
Damn. The Oakland Raiders, or the Las Vegas Raiders, yes, my friend, are a little upset right now. They were set to pick at 17, and they were really eyeing themselves some Christian Darrisaw, because right now they're starting right tackles Brandon Parker. And Brandon Parker is stiff as a board out there. And Colton Miller, he's developed into a nice player. Good for him coming out of UCLA, because he had a lot of athletic upside coming out of UCLA. But like we've said a couple times on the podcast, he got Josh Rosen killed several times.
Yeah, I mean, like, college. People have come back to me on that, Nick, and I'm sure this might have happened to you. You can let me know if it has. But like, people have recently DM'd me like, you said Colton Miller was going to be burnt. Like, yeah, I did say it was a bad pick, because at the time it was a bad pick because he was awful. But as I've been proven before, and I'll be proven again, the draft is a goddamn crapshoot. You can't predict these things one for one. You're not going to get all these right. And so I was wrong on his evaluation. The Raiders were correct. They thought he could develop, and he did. But let's keep in mind, by the way, even though they re-signed him, Nick, he was graded out as the 33rd best tackle, according to Pro Football Focus last year. So it's not like he was, according to them at least, and we don't want to go all by the stupid Pro Football Focus, because we've said in the past we don't really buy into it too much. But it's not like he was a lead or anything.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But back to the Las Vegas Raiders. So I'm probably going to wait on tackle. I'm thinking about going Tevin Jenkins and maybe even unsexy with someone like Liam Eikenberg. I think Tevin Jenkins fits the identity a little bit more, to be honest. But I might go with the whole, hey, this is Mike Mayock.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at this, he says, this guy might have some character issues, but we can change him. And then go and just draft Micah Parsons out of Penn State.
Ooh, I like that.
Where'd you think I was going there?
I thought you were going to go with Mayock. I thought you know he's taking 70,000 Clemson players.
Guys. But yeah, like Travis Etienne.
I thought, not even Etienne, I thought you were going to go with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, because he's also, Notre Dame's played in a lot of the college football playoffs.
He's a big Notre Dame guy.
You know he's a huge all-college football playoff guy. Like, he watches those college football play. Those are his biggest scouting moments, Mayock, now. He, like, spends a lot of time.
The way I look at it, and I like Jock a lot, but he's more of the linebacker safety hybrid, whereas Micah Parsons, if he had to be a hybrid, he's more of a traditional linebacker, but you can use him on the edge pretty effectively, and I do believe he can kind of help the lack of pass rush there now that Yannick Ngakoue is no longer there, and they have Cleveland Farrell, who has not lived up to it, and Max Crosby, who was a nice pick in, what was that, the fourth round back in 2019, had a little bit of a down year this year, but his rookie season was phenomenal. So I think Micah Parsons can really just slide in there and kind of kick Nick Kwiatkowski, who they signed in the offseason of 2020, out of that middle linebacker spot, and they can use Kwiatkowski somewhere else. Oh, yeah, they have Yannick Ngakoue at the strong side linebacker.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, and so I'm going to add Micah Parsons there, and it's going to be a nice little Penn State addition from a Boston College guy.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's an interesting play for them. And then back on the clock here, at 18 overall, the Dolphins, after having already selected Jalen Waddle to add speed to that wide receiver core, now we're back in the same position there where I honestly do believe that offensive line is still a major need for them. I just don't really necessarily know if they're going to address it early because I think that they might try to go in with Hunt and Jackson as their tackles, in which case, you know, if they're going to address the interior, it might come in the second or third round. So I'm going to have them go defense. I'm going to have them draft into the system we all know well because it's a system very similar to the one the Giants run with Patrick Graham. So I'm obviously going to be looking for players who would fit that specific system. But I think they, regardless, need to get a little bit stronger on the interior defensive line here, or with at least players who can rush from the interior at times. So actually, I'm going to go with Gregory Rousseau here. I think this is where Rousseau will come off the board. I think if the Dolphins don't do it, he may last all the way into middle of day two, potentially. But I think the Dolphins are actually a team that could really use him in, as like kind of their version of like a Leonard Williams type. He's not as big as Leonard, obviously. He is close to as long as Leonard, but he's not as big as him. But he's a big boy, and he's going to grow into his frame a lot more, too. I think he's going to be able to put on 20, 30 pounds on that frame. And I think he can be that kind of hybrid edge slash interior defensive line, interior pass rusher for the Dolphins that I think that system needs. I mean, they have Christian Wilkins, who's a good player, but and who's can fit that role in some regard. But outside of that, their defensive line, their interior defensive line, to me, is looking pretty weak. So I think that's the direction they go there with an edge guy and specifically Gregory Rousseau.
Love it, Dan. So NFC East rival, the football team, who hail from Washington. And honestly, since all these tackles went off the board, like, I wanted to give them a tackle, to be honest, like a Christian Darrisaw. I'm really debating on giving them Tevin Jenkins, somebody like that. But I believe Washington likes a little bit more length. And these tackles that I like right now, they don't really have that. They don't crack those length thresholds. Both Tevin Jenkins and Liam Eikenberg have pretty short arms. So then you're looking at the Samuel Cosmes of the world. You're looking at the Alex Leatherwoods. But I look at this linebacking group, and I look at the fact that Ron Rivera has had fast linebackers his time in Carolina. Back when Dave Gettleman was there, they drafted Shaq Thompson out of Washington, I believe it was. And they got Luke Kuechly out of Boston College. That was a little bit before that, before Dave Gettleman's time. So I think they really want to upgrade the speed on the second level of the defense to complement that amazing pass rush that they have in the solid secondary. So I'm going to go with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, linebacker, safety, whatever you really want to use him as, out of Notre Dame.
And that will make for a really scary defense that the Giants are going to have to face two times a year, in my opinion. Not the. I hope they go different directions for the Giants' sake. I don't want him on that team. And then at number 20 overall, I'm on the board with the Bears. Weird team here, in my opinion. Just an aimless team. I feel like their direction of this franchise has been subpar for quite some time. But as you look at this roster, they just signed Robert Quinn to a massive deal, and they have Khalil Mack as a massive deal. So even though there are pass rushes that I think can make sense here, not for this team specifically. I think they've also done a good job improving their secondary with Jalen Johnson last year, and obviously they have Eddie Jackson, Tayshaun Gimpson, you know, and players at the second level as well. So I think they're actually going to look to the offensive side of the ball here. And this is where I'm going Tevin Jenkins, their offensive lineman. It's been a discussion among Bears fans forever that they need to improve this offensive line. It's been struggling now for quite some time. They got away with it during their big year when Trubisky broke out because they have a solid interior line with James Daniels and Cody White here. But besides those two, Charles Leno, okay player at one of the tackle spots, and they got basically nothing else at the other tackle spot. So here I think they go with Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State, the right tackle. He slots right in day one for them at right tackle and helps them in the run game, and hopefully for their sake, helps Andy Dalton stay upright.
Yeah, and that's going to be something they're going to need, which transitions us to the Indianapolis Colts, who recently acquired Carson Wentz from the Philadelphia Eagles. You have Frank Reich, offensive-minded head coach. Matt Eberflus is their defensive coordinator. He likes to run a lot of cover two concepts, a lot of zone. That's why Xavier Rhodes has been thriving there after flaming out over there the Minnesota Vikings. So as I kind of try to stall time to look at who I want to draft, I mean, I'm trying to look at just some of the guys.
Don't
that
pull
are,
a Vikings where the clock runs out and the pick goes. Oh, remember that when
gosh,
we were kids?
Of course, I remember
clock
that.
Clock ran out and went on to the next pick. That was incredible.
It was very incredible. So I know the general manager, Chris Ballard, really puts a lot of priority on explosive traits and length. Those are things that the Colts always seem to target. They love their the guys with linear explosive traits, so they test really well, say, on the broad jump, the vertical jump, and they usually have some sort of length threshold. So with that said, I look at their front. They have Tyquan Lewis, the guy they drafted in the second round out of Ohio State. You have DeForest Buckner, incredibly long stud that you acquired from San Francisco. But I'm looking at Jalen Phillips right now, man. And Jalen Phillips is a player that has about 50th percentile arm length, over 33 inches. That's a threshold you really look for. 34 is more ideal, but he tests for an edge, about 50th percentile. Vertical jump, 81st percentile, 36 inches. 125-inch broad jump, so over 10 feet. Plus 5 inches, that's 90th percentile. And he's 6'5", 260 pounds, running a 4.56. So he has all the athletic traits that I feel like Chris Ballard's going to look for. He has the lower body explosiveness. He's long, and you can do so many different things with him. So I'm going to lock him in for the Colts. Jalen Phillips, yeah. Edge from Miami.
I like that pick for the Colts a lot here. I think that's a good spot for them. And as we move forward to 21 overall, it's the Titans, who we just had Elliot Christ of FTN on, said he likes as a value bet. Titans to go defensive line first. I actually don't like that move. I think that they looked at it like, we're going to address our needs in free agency so we have more of an option to go with the best player available in the draft. And they did address that with Bud Dupree on the edge. They then also got Janoris Jenkins to kind of be that stopgap solution for losing Adoree Jackson, who was kind of cut by them due to, you know, their cap. Where they saw Dory or their cap position, it's hard to really know there. So I actually have them going on the other side of the ball. And I have them looking on the offensive line, where they tried and failed to find an offensive lineman who could work for them last year when they selected, now the guy I'm blanking on, he's so bad, the Georgia tackle who
Isaiah Wilson.
Wilson.
Yeah.
To try to replace Jack Conklin there, it didn't work. It was a problem for them all season. I think that was obvious for them. And if you listen to any of, you know, Titans breakdowns, you knew that was the case. And I think what they might actually try to do here is go offensive line. But at this point, all the good prospects I think that they would like here are off the board. You can maybe try to stretch into the guys like Jalen Mayfield to put right away and hope he can be a plug-and-play guy. He has some issues. Samuel Cosmi, I think, shows some good signs in pass protection and projects well there, but I think he has some issues for year one. Same with Alex Leatherwood. Instead, I think they're going to look at this like, we have an opportunity to take the best player available in their mind, and I think this is where we see Rashad Bateman come off the board to replace Corey Davis there. I know they signed Josh Reynolds from the Rams, a player I think was incredibly underrated this free agency period and has a lot of untapped upside. But I don't think he's someone you can fully bank on there to be your wide receiver too. And I think this offense works better with someone like Bateman, who can get that quick separation off the play action game, like they're going to want to run with Henry, with Ryan Tannehill. So I think that this is where they go Rashad Bateman, the wide receiver out of Minnesota.
Love it, dude. Rashad Bateman is now off the board. We have some receivers. I wonder if these these other guys are going to slide in here, because I feel like these are the consensus, almost consensus, first-round wide receivers,
yeah,
right here.
Right there.
And this is where you get into the Rondell Moores of the world and the Terrace Marshalls and the Kadarius Tonys. I wonder what they will slide in. But they won't be sliding into the New York Jets, because I hold their pick right now. We have Robert Saleh coming over, and they have this pick from the Jamal Adams trade. And I could go edge. I'm thinking about Azeez Ojulari, thinking about cornerback. You can look at the running back position. I'm not going to ultimately go there. But with this pick, I'm going to go with cornerback out of Northwestern, Greg Newsome, who can really help shore up this secondary, because you have Marcus May, who I think is a nice player. He's your safety. You drafted him out of Florida in the second round back in 2017. Ashton Davis, you got in the third round last year. And then you got Bryce Hall with a fifth-round pick in 2020, who's had a lot of injury issues throughout his career. And then Austin Blessian. they really don't have that many things going on in the secondary. And I think Greg Newsome steps up right there. He's the best player at the cornerback position right away. So I think this is a lock it in type of pick if Greg Newsome falls this far.
I really like that pick for them as well there. I think it's a smart pick. I think it's going to ultimately help them a lot there. And then the Steelers are on the board here at 24. And again, if I'm the Jets, I'd be looking to get an offensive lineman. But I think at this point, the offensive line drives up. I mean, you could try to go create Humphrey or Dickerson on the interior, but I don't know if I would do that when you got a guy like Greg Newsom on the board, who some people view as the best corner in this class. So I think you made the right call there. The Steelers here, I think it's interesting, the spot they're in, because I think they want to find a quarterback, but they're not going to be able to do it in this class unless they trade up. I don't think they'll reach on any of the other quarterbacks that have already that are still on the board. And I think the offensive line is their biggest focus here, and this is another spot where, like, you would have to kind of do they want to try to immediately replace what they lost with Pouncey? They tried to do it by signing Connor McGovern. I don't know if they view him as a long-term solution. Maybe they go with a Creed Humphrey here. It's like that. But no, what I think they're going to actually do is try to replace what they lost with Bud Dupree and get an edge rusher who they believe here can be one of the top players. And I'm going to put them with Azeez Ojulari here, actually, who I think can kind of they're going to try to have fit in similar to Bud Dupree, who, by the way, when he came in to the NFL, was also kind of viewed as like somebody who has to kind of a type of hybrid linebacker slash edge who's going to have to convert and learn. And eventually he did play well within that Steelers system. And I think Ojulari can do something very similar to them here. And so I have Ojulari going to the Steelers here.
Ooh, I think there was a lot of different ways we could have went. I like that, though. I mean, you need to replace Bud Dupree. And now, what better way to come into the NFL than to have everybody on the offense pay attention to T.J. Watt so you can get one-on-ones and win with your stab, rip, dip move that he has. So that's great. That's a great landing spot for Azeez Ojulari. And that brings us to the Jacksonville Jaguars at the 25th pick.
I think. I see what you did there.
Yeah, I just slipped it in there. And there are still some top guys with injury concerns who are on the board. If we reassess, we still have Caleb Farley on the board who is sliding down. That's because of the back issues. Last year, Jags drafted C.J. Henderson in the top 10 out of Florida, and he had an up-and-down year. They also have Sidney Jones, who had a kind of a reclamation year after being released. Yeah, after being released from the Philadelphia Eagles. And then the other top guys, I would say, that are around right now are Travis Etienne. I think that's an interesting option here just because you have Trevor Lawrence. You want to make him comfortable. You bring in Travis Etienne, but I'm not necessarily probably going to go in that direction. You have all the running backs. You got the Zaven Collins of the world. And then you have TCU safety Trevon Moehrig. And I think this is somebody who I haven't done an extensive amount of work on the safety class, but everything I've seen from this kid is he has basically everything except for like the ideal type of size that I feel like a lot of people talk about. But just from a ball skill standpoint, from a run support standpoint, from a range standpoint, he's exactly what you want. What better way to kind of help shore up your secondary, help C.J. Henderson, help all these other young corners that you're having to bring in a Trevon Moehrig? So that's where I'm going to go.
I like that pick a lot there for them. I think it's one of the team, like Elliot said during our podcast with him advising us on gambling on the draft, like don't try to pin a player to a team. But this is like, and I did that last year with Xavier McKinney of the Cowboys. I thought that was going to be almost a lock. And obviously, I've read since that it could have happened if CeeDee Lamb didn't fall. So I kind of got unlucky there. But I'm not going to try to pin a prospect and player again like this to a team. But I think Moehrig is probably one of the likelier players to go to the Jaguars at that pick. It just seems like a nice fit. But for me here, at 25 overall, I'm in an interesting spot because I'm sorry, 26 overall. I'm in an interesting spot because I'm the Browns. And the Browns don't really have a single roster hole when I look at it. I mean, like, there's only one roster hole I can think of, which is going to be the position I ultimately end up taking here, because it's also a player I think can be viewed as potentially one of the top picks in this class, because they've already shored up their offensive line. That's unbelievable. They have one of the best running backs in the NFL. I think he's the best running back in the NFL, Nick Chubb. They also have Kareem Hunt behind him. On defense, they just signed Clowney to go along with Myles Garrett, Andrew Billing, a really nice deep line. They have good corners with Denzel Ward, when healthy at least. Grant Delpit, they hope, will come back and help them. They just signed Troy Hill and John Johnson from the Rams, two really good players for that secondary. They're loaded there. They could consider receiver with the idea of, like, we'll cut Odell next year, and we may cut Landry soon because he's also kind of paid a lot. And we'll try to move forward here with a receiver we draft here, Donovan Peoples-Jones, something of that nature. I think it's possible. But ultimately here, I'm going to go with the position I think is the greatest need and a player I think fits fine here. And that's Jamon Davis from Kentucky. I don't know if Jameen or Jamon. Don't know if I pronounced it.
Jamon.
Jamon Davis.
Yeah.
He's shooting up draft boards, Jamon Davis, because a lot of people are starting to kind of correlate him to this year's version of Darius Leonard. For those of you who don't remember, Darius Leonard, the Colts selected him. Really huge surprise when they selected him in the top of second round of the 2018 draft class, the one where the Giants got Barkley and Hernandez. Most people viewed him as a day three pick just because of his size. Ultimately, he ended up winning Defensive Rookie of the Year and revolutionize kind of what people are looking for in that off-ball linebacker position. Now a player like Davis, who would normally be undersized and considered maybe someone you can't take in round one, I think a lot of teams are considering in this late round one spot, and I think the Browns land a really good off-ball linebacker prospect here.
Jamin has been one of the darlings of people who started grinding the film and realizing his athletic potential. I don't think everything's quite there yet on his film. He hasn't been a full-time player all that much, but there's definitely a lot of upside with a player like Jamin Davis, so that's a really good fit. And now we're at the Baltimore Ravens, so they get to watch Jamin Davis go to the Browns, but the Ravens are going to be happy because the linebacker that they want, Zaven Collins, is still there, and they're going to go with the linebacker to Tulsa, Zaven Collins. And I honestly put real thought into going Christian Barmore and having an interior defensive lineman actually come off the board here. They have Brandon Williams, who is just a big, solid nose technique, totally different type of player from a Christian Barmore. You have Calais Campbell. You know they love big, athletic guys who can shoot gaps, but they drafted Justin Madubuike out of Texas A&M last year in the third round. He's similar in that light, only Barmore is much more dynamic, I would say, and I don't know, Madubuike does have some really interesting agilities, at least on his tape. I'm not really 100% sure how he tested, but I think Zaven Collins can kind of step in here, play next to Patrick Queen. I think Malik Harrison can still be on the field along with LJ Fort, but I think you can put him on the edge a little bit more, Zaven Collins, and he can kind of help take over the role of Matt Judon, who left, along with Pernell McPhee, who's in his, I believe, his last year of his contract, and Tyus Bowser, who's on that roster. So I think Zaven Collins will end up kind of taking over their roles as the years go on, and he'll be in a bit role early on, but he's still a very effective player you can do a lot of different things with. I think Wink Martindale will really like that, Ravens defensive coordinator. So I'm going to go with Zaven there.
I like that call a lot here. And then as we move forward, we're looking at number 28 overall pick with New Orleans Saints, another roster that doesn't need much help, doesn't seem to need any help on the offensive line. The two positions I view here, considering quarterback won't really be a possibility, are wide receiver and cornerback. Wide receiver, you think, well, they could use more weapons outside of Michael Thomas for sure, but on the flip side, they got Michael Thomas with a second-round pick, and they're not a team that notoriously uses early picks on the skill players. Do I think Elijah Moore could be an unbelievable fit here in that system with Sean Payton? Yes, but at the same time, I'm going to have them go with a cornerback here because I think they let Janoris Jenkins go. There's been rumors they're not going to be able to afford Marshon Lattimore past this year. Obviously, Patrick Robinson is still playing well for them, but he was drafted in 2010. He's getting older. That cliff could fall off at any time for Patrick Robinson. So I think they replenish here in the secondary. Sitting on the board as a glaring player would be Caleb Farley, but I actually am going to have them pass on Caleb Farley here. I'm going to have them go with Asante Samuel Jr., a player who I think is incredibly underrated. We did his draft profile way early in the process, and I thought he was one of the better corners that I've seen. I think a lot of the things people say about Newsome, I think, can be applied to Samuel. He doesn't have all the measurables. He doesn't have the perfect length and size. He's not the most physical corner or the strongest corner, but I think he's going to fit well there in man coverage. They like to run a lot, and I think he's going to be a nice fit immediately for him, and I actually think he's going to be a really good NFL player. Asante Samuel, I think it'll be well worth a first round pick.
Yeah, if he wasn't 5'9", I think we'd be talking about him more. But again, like as people always say when you make that comparison, well, if my aunt had hair on her back, she'd be my uncle. So, but I do agree. I think he's a very talented player.
If my aunt had hair on her back, she'd be my uncle.
You never heard that before?
I'm pretty sure it's my aunt had hair on her balls.
No, it's her back.
I'm pretty sure. Let's get some listeners to weigh in on this. It's if my aunt had hair on her balls.
Well, the person who
said an aunt can't have hair on her.
She doesn't have balls.
Ah, I fucked this up.
but I could still, like, I mean, you're speaking hypotheticals, so I mean, maybe in that world they had balls.
I'm done. This was a disaster.
I was trying to help you out, bro. Okay, so we're at the Green Bay Packers, and honestly, I think there's a lot of directions now. You can go quarterback, obviously, because they have Jordan Love. No, I'm just joking. But you can go running back because of AJ Dillon. No, I'm just joking. But seriously, I think you can look at the defensive line. You have Kenny Clark there. He's a stud. I think you can look at those base ends that they like. And I think Boogie Basham really makes sense for them. Carlos Basham, the kid out of Wake Forest. But I don't believe I'm going to go in that direction. You always look at wide receiver. You know, oh, you got to get Aaron Rodgers, the wide receivers. I don't think I'm going to go in that direction either. But you did lose Corey Linsley to the Los Angeles Chargers. And you can slide Elgin Jenkins there, who's an absolute stud. But he's also natural at guard. So you can kick Jenkins back to guard and then bring in Creed Humphrey. And Creed Humphrey can be your center. So that's what I'm going to to go. I'm going to go with Oklahoma center Creed Humphrey.
Love that pick. And it's so Packers-like to not let that offensive line sit. You look at this team, and when they've lost offensive linemen, they immediately have replaced. They took Elgin Jenkins. Incredible pick by them. They took him in the middle. What Elgin Jenkins is what Will Hernandez should have damn been.
Oh, it's so painful.
Like, they
so
got painful. Elgin Jenkins around the same spot the Giants got Will Hernandez, and Elgin Jenkins has been unbelievable on the interior versus Hernandez, who's a Jag. And it's like, even going into that, you looked at those two prospects, and honestly, if you ask most NFL scouts, I bet you they would have said Hernandez was going to be a better player.
Probably. I know a lot of people were.
A lot of people were.
They were different draft classes.
But I think a lot of people viewed Hernandez as a locked-in first-round prospect, and Jenkins, I thought, I saw more of, like, borderline 1-2. And he's been the way better player, so just Packers, again, winning on the line. But I agree with that pick. I like that pick. At 30 overall here, with the third-to-last pick of the first round, it's the Buffalo Bills here, who are in a really good spot. They had, obviously, a borderline Super Bowl roster, almost made it, AFC Championship game. They're looking to take that next step now with the Josh Allen team. And so they have a lot of options here. But I'm going to have them go with a pass rusher here, because they obviously selected A.J. Epenesa last year. And for those of you who don't remember, A.J. Epenesa was subject of my my Twitter beef with Paul Dottino. For those of you who don't know about the Twitter beef, hit me up and I'll send you some screenshots and some links. I'm not going to go over it again. But Epenesa ended up being an awful player for the Bills in year one, which is not to say he's going to be a bad player. He's a much better fit for that system than the Giants anyway.
Yeah, they actually had him. They had him cut, like, massive weight, too. So they just had him totally change his body composition and everything like that.
Yeah. I got to be honest, though. He just struck me as so much like one of those next Cleveland Farrell types that just good in college, but it doesn't translate tools-wise. And he might be an okay player for them, but I don't think they feel like they're settled at edge there after that pick at all. And he didn't play many snaps either for them, which is not a good sign.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Considering they needed somebody opposite of Jerry Hughes. So now that they need someone opposite of Jerry Hughes, I'm going to have them take someone opposite Jerry Hughes here. And I'm going to have them go with Boogie Basham, the player you discussed. I think they can view it as a situation where they run a system where he can play on the edge. Maybe he can be what they had hoped A.J. Epenesa could be. I think he's a better player than Epenesa, a better prospect. And he can kick inside and rush the passer from the interior on some third down. So I'm going with Carlos Basham out of Wake Forest here for the Bills.
Nice, man. I like that. When it comes to his skill set, I feel like not a lot of people have talked about him as a first-round pick. And he might ultimately not go in the first round, but if he does, I don't feel like people should be surprised. And I have a similar feeling about Creed Humphrey. A lot of people refer to him as a second-round pick, and ultimately he probably will go in the second round. But if he ends up in the first, I'm going to be like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah,
because he's a good football player. You know, a good football player. Like, Boogie Basham, I don't think the guy, like, ever missed a snap. The guy was, like, always on the field. He played, like, 80 snaps a game. It was, you know.
And he has a nice frame. Like, he's a really good frame
big.
For the, yeah.
Yeah, he's a big player for sure. Big guy. Alrighty, so we're back with the Baltimore Ravens since the trade with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Blockbuster.
Yes. And honestly, it's a trade, Dan, that I feel like both teams got what they needed.
I think the Chiefs are the bigger winners here. Okay. I don't think the Ravens wanted to have to trade a young offensive tackle.
Absolutely not, but it was out there that all their leverage was gone.
They lost all
and
their
they still got a one. So that's
based
why
on all
it's
that
rare.
I don't think they got screwed. I agree with you.
Yeah.
From that standpoint, the value part, I'm with you. I just think they are the net losers here because they're not at 31 overall. They're not likely to find another
Orlando Brown
Jr. Like, you might hit, but you're not, like, it's not easy to hit on players, especially offensive linemen. It's so hard to hit offensive tackles, and it sucked because, like he said, like, they had no leverage. He said, "I'm only playing left tackle for whatever reason." Like,
yeah.
And so, like,
and honestly, when that happened, I was like, "Ooh, this might not be good for the Ravens," because people are like, "Dude, like, we know he doesn't want to play for you." So, but
right.
Good for the Chiefs. We're like, yeah, we're a little bit desperate. And you got to look at the Chiefs, too. Applaud them a little bit, man. Got Long, got Orlando Brown, and then you
and Joe Thuney.
Yeah, that's a revamp of your offensive line that you really desperately needed. And we're replacing, we're going to replace Orlando Brown right now. And as much as I would like to go guys that I like Liam Eikenberg, I don't believe that meshes with exactly what they want. They want someone gigantic, someone with vines for arms. So I'm going to go with Samuel Cosmi here. I wish he was a little bit more flexible in his lower half, but I still believe just the tools, the sheer fact that he's like almost 6'8", over 300 pounds, it can punch. Definitely needs refinement. Definitely not a technically sound tackle yet. It's a little bit raw, but I believe going to Baltimore with that coaching staff, he can get that. So I'm going to go with Cosmi here.
I like Cosmi a lot. I think he's a little bit better than people give him credit for. He may not be that great run blocker at any point, but in some systems, I think he can be a fine run blocker, specifically zone. based systems. And he reminds me a lot coming out of actually Nate Solder when Nate Solder came out of Colorado. I think they're similar prospects from what I've seen, just from the build, from some of the things that even you just discussed, how it's kind of the lower half doesn't have ultimately that much strength, but pretty solid bend in my opinion for someone who's almost 6'8", just as Solder was. So overall, pretty smooth, I think, as well, footwork-wise for someone that size. So I like that pick a lot. And I'll close out the first round with the easiest luxury. I mean, this is literally the luxury spot of the first round. The Bucks can do anything they want here. Their roster is so good. I mean, I look at that roster and, like, yeah, you can always improve your offensive line here, but I don't really like any of the offensive linemen available. I'm going full luxury here, and not to the sense of I'm going running back, because I don't think they're going to invest there, especially after signing Gio Bernard to play that role there. I'm going to go with Elijah Moore, one of my favorite players in this draft class, a player who I think deserves to be a first-round pick, and I'm going to be really happy. Well, I'm not going to be happy because I want the Giants to get him, but I guess if the Giants go receiver round one, like an Omar Mock, I'll be happy with him going anywhere before the Giants pick at 42, because I know they're not going to go receiver, as they shouldn't. So I'll be happy for him if he goes here. I think he ultimately replaces Antonio Brown right away. Yeah, they have Tyler Johnson, who's shown some obvious upside, but he's not Elijah Moore. He's not anything like Elijah Moore. And I think Elijah Moore in this vertically attacking Arians system could be so fun on those vertical routes, on those double moves with Brady. If you guys on the same page, I think they can motion him into the backfield and Brady can dump him the ball and design dump offs and design quick hitters. I just think there's so much upside for that offense by adding him here. So I'm going Elijah Moore here at 32 to the Bucks.
No, and that wraps up the first round, dude.
Why don't you recap it for us, Nick? Throw it back.
Okay. Jaguars, first pick, Trevor Lawrence. Second pick, Jets, Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU. Third pick, 49ers, Mac Jones, quarterback, Alabama. Fourth, Falcons, Trey Lance, quarterback, NDSU. Five, Bengals, Ja'Marr Chase, LSU wide receiver. Six, Dolphins, Jalen Waddle. They should know the positions in this. Yeah. Let's be honest. Seven, Lions get Penei Sewell. Eight, Carolina, Rashawn Slater. Nine, Broncos get Justin Fields to replace Drew Lock. 10, Kyle Pitts, and every Giant fan goes, damn it. Then the Giants are sitting there at 11, and they go with Devonta Smith to kind of pair with Daniel Jones for the rest of his contract, and Kenny Golladay, and this offense is looking really good. Let's hope Jason Garrett can figure it all out. Then at 12, the Eagles go J.C. Horn. 13, Chargers go Elijah Vera Tucker. 14, Vikings, Kwity Paye. 15, Patriots, Patrick Surtain. 16, Cardinals, Christian Darrisaw. 17, Raiders, Micah Parsons. 18, Dolphins, Gregory Rousseau. Washington goes with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah at 19. And then 20 is Tevin Jenkins for Chicago. 21, Colts, Jalen Phillips. 22, Titans, Rashad Bateman. 23, Jets, Greg Newsome. 24, Pittsburgh goes with Azeez Ojulari. One of my guys, but, you know, he's gone now. 25, Giants are not going to get him in the second round anyway. That's just pie in the sky type stuff. 25, Jaguars go with Trevon Moehrig. 26, Browns go with Jamin Davis. 27, Ravens go Zaven Collins. 28, Saints, Asante Samuel Jr. 29, Green Bay, Creed Humphrey. 30, Buffalo, Carlos Boogie Basham. 31, Baltimore, Samuel Cosmi. And 32, Elijah Moore to the Buccaneers.
Let's go over who is still on the board. Who's there for that second day?
Going to pick 42, the Giants already have a wide receiver. So Landon Dickerson's still on the board. I think he's going to be atop their list.
Yep, Caleb Farley.
Wow, Caleb Farley's fallen.
Yes, he definitely
Terrace Marshall, another potential injury faller.
Every running back is still on the board.
Yes.
And they would start coming. I'm imagining the Jets would invest in the running back position.
Not with Joe Douglas, I don't think.
You don't think so?
No, just my guess.
Who's their running back right now?
I don't think he's going to ever.
LaMichael P. Ryan?
They don't have anyone at running back right now, but I don't think Joe Douglas as a GM will ever invest a high pick on a running back.
Oh, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, you never know.
The receivers, Rondell Moore, the kid from Florida, yes. Kadarius Toney, Dyami Brown from North Carolina, Jalen Mayfield, the tackle from Michigan, Jason Owe. There's a lot of talent still.
Yeah, Giants could be in a good spot.
I don't think we had any huge shockers fall out, did we?
No, I mean, Caleb Farley would probably be the biggest shocker, but that's injury-based, and Terrace Marshall, borderline anyway, but we've been hearing injuries will drop him potentially. Other than that, no real shockers. I mean, even Edge, you saw most of the good edges come off the ball. Some people say Joe Tryon's moving up boards. He may be a pick. We didn't have him in our mock.
No. I mean, yeah, Joe Tryon's, like, if you're looking for somebody with, like, the Montez Sweat prototype of just length and explosiveness, but maybe not everything on film quite yet. And wish you saw him in 2020, but he was an opt-out. And then,
right.
And a lot of people are saying, you know, don't be surprised if these opt-outs fall. And I wonder if that's like even getting to the Penei Sewells and the freaking Rashawn Slaters of the world.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if it'll reach high.
I don't think it should, but I would love it.
Yeah, especially if the Giants actually did take one of those two. I'd be in love with that as well. All right, thanks everybody for tuning in to the Big Blue Banter first round mock draft. As always, please do us a favor. Head over to iTunes. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. We would love you if you do that. If you ask us a question in that review, we'll make sure to read that question as part of your review. We're up to 546 ratings there. We got a lot of good ones coming in, so I really do appreciate that from everyone. Sad Giants fan who just dropped one. DC Park, who's an Eagles fan but wanted to scope out the competition, has learned a lot about draft prospects. A lot of good stuff here in these reviews. And please, please do us a favor. Head over to Instagram. Follow us on Instagram at NYBigBlueBanter. Please follow our YouTube page, Big Blue Banter on YouTube. That's the most important thing you can do to help us grow right now. Follow our YouTube page. Help us get that thing underway. We're learning on the fly, so we need your help. And then lastly, as always, join us Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, on the Locker Room app for a live Q&A show. Otherwise, have a great rest of your week, and we'll be talking to you very soon.